unforgettable in every way. And forevermore, that's how you'll stay.
I think that Nat was first of all a musician, and he cared most about making music, as has been evidenced by his long list of recordings, and successful recordings, that is, and his brilliant piano playing. You don't get that by just being sexy. He was a darn good musician.
He came up through the big bands. He came up through playing shows and so forth. And he learned to do what he did, as many musicians of his generation did, by the process of doing it with seminal performers. He played and sang with just about everybody you can think of, and developed a very personal approach to American music. So his contribution, in part, is what he has left in the vocabulary that we all use in American music.
The music was like Joe Louis was to the sports public. His music, the mere fact that he was recording and his records were being played.
He was a great piano player. I didn't know he could sing, though.
Nat King Cole, Unforgettable. By now, it's a familiar sound in America, a Grammy Award-winning hit more than four decades after it was first recorded. Proof that Nat King Cole is unforgettable. His voice is one of the most identifiable in American music, but he was much more than that effortlessly stylish crooner. It may be that some of his greatest contributions have been forgotten. Nat Cole was one of the most important jazz pianists and a tireless musical innovator. He virtually invented the jazz trio, and he used his enormous success to break racial barriers on radio, later on television, and on stages across the country. Nat Cole has left behind a tremendous musical and cultural legacy, which can never be forgotten. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles. On this show, the first of a two-part tribute, we take a closer listen to Nat King Cole, the jazz pianist.
He was one of the first that I can recall to pare down the ensemble to the piano, bass, and guitar. That was followed quickly by others who saw his success. And working with a guitar is a very intricate business for a pianist, because you've got to get your chords and your figures and your syncopation together. And Nat, with Oscar Moore, had worked it out to a fairly well.
Singer and pianist Bobby Short, talking about the King Cole Trio. Nat Cole met his greatest success as a singer of ballads and pop standards, but he was first and foremost a jazz musician, and that informed everything he did in his career. He burst upon the scene by taking an instrumental form and breathing new musical life into it. There had been piano trios before Nat Cole, but they were never the same after he got hold of it. The Nat King Cole Trio began in 1937 in Los Angeles as the King Cole Swingsters, with Nat Cole at the piano, guitarist Oscar Moore, and bassist Wesley Prince. Bobby Short and arranger Pete Rugolo remember those days.
The environment was fraught with musicians who were talented and ready and willing and able, because there was no television, and so one recorded or one played on the radio. Or even better for us listeners, one played in clubs live, and there were gigs all over the place. There was always a weekend, always a Saturday night, always a holiday gig. There were always chances for live music to be played, and there were countless bars and restaurants and grills and hotel rooms where one could go and play. Nat played at a place called the 331, I remember, over on 8th Street for a long, long time. A lot of action.
I used to go here and play with his trio on Western Avenue at 331 Club. And he never thought of singing, except he would sing a song once in a while. He'd sing Sweet Lorraine or something. And no one, you know, he loved singing, but never thought he'd make a living at singing, because he was known as a great pianist and his trio was so great.
Nat Cole piano, Oscar Moore guitar, and Wesley Prince bass. The King Cole Trio with their 1940 version of Honeysuckle Rose. Jazz writer Will Friedwald.
The specific origin of the trio is that Cole was working as a solo piano player, or, you know, getting whatever kind of job he could. Nat said later on that he worked every beer joint from San Diego to Bakersfield in those early days when he had just come out to Los Angeles. And eventually, Bob Lewis of the Swanee Inn gave him the idea to put together a quartet, which would be a rhythm section with piano, bass, drums, and guitar. And I should say that the guitar was a standard instrument of the swing era rhythm section. Later on, I think because of economy, the standard rhythm section became just piano, bass, and drums. But in the 30s and 40s, the guitar was fairly standard. And essentially the story goes that they put together this group for the Swanee Inn, and Lee Young just didn't show up. He was the drummer that Nat had hired, and he didn't make it. And at some point, he just discovered that he liked it better without the drums. And that sort of gave him the edge to develop his really own individual piano style, based primarily on the absence of the drummer. I think that you could say that Cole was the first to really make a point of using that instrumentation and really figuring out what was unique about it and what was special, and, you know, the way that the three instruments could fit together in a whole new way. And Cole not only did that musically, but in terms of his career, he really so effectively popularized that combination that there were literally dozens and dozens of these groups in the late 40s that were patterned, you know, directly after the King Cole Trio, the Page Cavanaugh Trio, all sorts of groups like that.
Pianist Billy Taylor.
There was a whole period where if your trio didn't sound somewhat like Nat Cole, you didn't work too much. I mean, that was the standard by which many groups were judged.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to LA. More than 2,000 miles all the way. Get your kicks on Route 66. St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, and Oklahoma City looks mighty pretty. You'll see Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, Kingman, Barstow, San Bernardino. Won't you get hip to this timely tip?
The Nat King Cole Trio from 1946. With the Bobby Troup tune, Get Your Kicks on Route 66.
get your kicks on Route 66.
That tune was one of Nat's many hits for Capitol, his record label from 1943 until his death in 1965. It featured Oscar Moore on guitar, Johnny Miller, who joined the trio in 1943, playing bass, and Nat Cole on piano and vocals.
Musician, we still all think of Nat as a super piano player, which of course he was.
Nat, in the very early days, was such a swinging pianist. He had such a wonderful sense of where to put things rhythmically that his style was instantly identifiable and very influential.
Bassist Milt Henton and pianist Billy Taylor are just two of the many admirers of Nat King Cole's keyboard innovations. Nat drew upon the piano greats that preceded him, and he added to that legacy some touches that were all his own. Growing up in Chicago in the 1920s and 30s, he absorbed the music that he heard in his father's church and in the music clubs.
Nat Cole was very much a devotee of Teddy Wilson, and I'm sure he heard Art Tatum.
Writer Will Friedwald.
Jess Stacy with Benny Goodman. All these players were people that he reflected in his work. Nat Cole was also influenced by some of the boogie-woogie people who were working in Chicago at that time, like Pete Johnson and Albert Ammons.
Milt Henton.
Well, we went to the same high school, the Winter Phillips High School. So many wonderful musicians have come out of that high school. It was in the black community in Chicago there. And we were a generation of black people that had made this exodus from the South to Chicago because there was a lot of good work there for unskilled laborers. And all of us going to the same high school. Now, my mother was a piano teacher and an organist of the church, and Nat Cole's father had a little storefront church, and my mother played the Sunday evening services for Nat's father's at his church. So my mother got a chance to teach Nat and help Nat with his piano playing, and had Nat playing for the BYPU. That's the evening service, young people's afternoon services at the church. Nat was not the one that we thought was most likely to succeed. It was his brother, Eddie. Eddie was absolutely fabulous. And he was the one that was really upset. He was a great, great piano player and played bass, and he sang.
Eddie Cole was a springboard for Nat Cole's early ventures as a professional musician. Here's a young Nat Cole at the piano with his brother's group, Eddie Cole's Solid Swingers, and a tune Nat wrote, Stompin' at the Panama. It was recorded in 1936, Nat's first recording session ever. Sister Evelyn recalls his development as a young pianist in Chicago.
And then I remember when Nat would play at the Savoy, and then they'd have contests at the Regal Theater in Chicago. But Nat would always go on amateur night just before Thanksgiving, and he would bring the turkey home. My mother would get everything except the turkey because she knew Nat was going to bring the turkey home.
In Chicago, Nat Cole heard the music of pianist Earl Father Hines and his orchestra, who were in residence for many years at the nearby Grand Terrace Ballroom.
Lived right across the street from it. We were at 4006 South Park at the time, and the Grand Terrace was right in front of us. ¶¶
Earl Hines and his orchestra, Grand Terrace Shuffle. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles, with a tribute to Nat King Cole. By the time Nat Cole encountered Earl Hines, Hines was already recognized as a major figure among jazz pianists. He had a significant influence on Nat Cole's developing style, and Cole acknowledged this by recording many of his tunes. We can detect the Hines influence on Nat Cole by comparing their versions of the same piece of music. Here's Hines' solo interpretation of one of his best-known numbers from this period, Rosetta. Nat Cole recorded Rosetta with his trio in the same year, 1939.
Nat Cole was similar to Hines in his piano playing, but he tended to take things a step further in his own direction. Hines was very fond of what he called trumpet-style piano, where he used a lot of whole octaves, and Cole tended to extend that a bit further with his own particular voicings of those octaves and those chords, and push it in a way where it sort of makes a connection between Earl Hines and the bebop movement. You could see where somebody like Nat King Cole would fit exactly between Hines and somebody like Bud Powell, who came later on. He really is a missing link in that respect.
One way we can hear how Nat Cole's piano style was harmonically advanced for its time is the way in which he used block chords in what's sometimes called the locked hand style. Pianist Monty Alexander.
It was this way of putting the two hands together. So if you were playing,
pianist Billy Taylor.
When Milt Buckner began to develop that style, one of the things that he did was to take a chord, and we'll say C major seventh chord, which would be C, E, G, and B from the root up. And what he would do is to play those notes as a chord and double the melody, which was the B.
Milt Buckner would have gone like this. Nat Cole might have said, because he's putting this extra note in there to make it a heavier chord, not a heavier chord in terms of weight, but just because it had more body. And you would have gone. You may not notice that, but it's just that subtle where it gave it that little extra twist.
It is only a paper moon hanging over a cardboard sea, but it wouldn't be make-believe. It's only a canvas sky sailing over a muslin tree, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me. Without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played on a penny arcade. It's a Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me.
It's Only a Paper Moon by the Nat King Cole Trio from 1943. Nat Cole piano and vocal, Oscar Moore guitar, and Johnny Miller bass. Another trademark of Nat Cole's distinctive piano style is the way he used his left hand. To some, It was a forerunner of the modern jazz style known as bebop. Monty Alexander demonstrates.
He hardly played the left hand at all. The tendency with a lot of jazz players who swing is to do a lot of left hand activity in a chordal way. With Nat, he would just play a little interjection there in the left hand, like he go. Just so sparsely, you know, and it could have been like. He could have been doing it like that, but he left it out, and he was a real classic example of less is more.
When I take my sugar to tea, all the boys are jealous of me, 'cause I never take away the gangles when I take my sugar to tea. I'm a rowdy, dowdy, that's me. She's a hi-hat, baby, that's she. So I never take away the gangles when I take my sugar to tea. Every Sunday afternoon, we forget about our cares, rubbing elbows at the Ritz with those millionaires. When I take my sugar to tea, I'm as ritzy as I can be, 'cause I never take away the gangles when I take my sugar to tea.
The King Cole Trio from 1947, When I Take My Sugar to Tea. Most of the trio's arrangement were well worked out routines, even the solos. Unlike many jazz virtuosos who improvise completely new solos each time they play a piece, Nat Cole would perfect a solo within a tune and vary it slightly from one performance to the next. Will Friedwald.
There was always this really careful, articulated combination of what has been preset and what is spontaneous. And in that respect, it's very much like Duke Ellington's orchestra, because on almost all the classic Ellington works, very few of the actual improvisations are actually improvised right on the spot. I mean, those solo routines were worked out, and they would play variations on them from night to night. You might say that there were variations on variations, but, you know, at least 60% of what either Nat Cole or a soloist in the Ellington group would play would be worked out beforehand.
Take, for instance, Johnny Green's tune, Body and Soul. The Nat King Cole Trio first recorded it in 1944.
It's an amazing record because Oscar Moore comes out and plays a guitar solo that's just unbelievable. It's one of the most remarkable things ever recorded on the guitar. And just when you're left, you know, panting for breath after hearing that, along comes Nat Cole, and he plays his solo, and it's even better. It's just majestic the way he builds a solo, basically using the melody of Body and Soul, but extending out of it to build this whole enormous structure, this like mountainous structure that just arises out of the chords to Body and Soul, which keeps quoting other songs and keeps building on top of itself in terms of space, in terms of harmony, and in terms of dramatic effect. It's one of the most remarkable things ever recorded in jazz. It's a masterpiece. Thank you.
tells you that he was always thinking of his audience.
Pianist Monty Alexander.
The song, of course, goes like this. Solo. No, that comes from some classical piece. I don't remember what it was. But every time he played that, the audience was, they were waiting for that because they heard it in a solo on a recording. And he goes in the bridge and... Love to quote.
Nat King Cole at the piano from a Jazz at the Philharmonic live performance in 1944. And before that, we heard the Nat King Cole Trio's first version of Body and Soul, recorded earlier that year. They went on to record it yet again in 1946. We'll hear how Nat Cole expanded his audience nationwide with his own radio program. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles. Nat King Cole, the jazz pianist, from NPR, National Public Radio.
King Cole Trio, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Yes, Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again the choice of men who put good grooming first, presents King Cole Trio Time.
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
If it hadn't been for radio, the Nat King Cole Trio might only have enjoyed a small local following from club appearances. But as early as 1938, the King Cole Trio was a regular Monday night feature on the radio. First on NBC's Blue Network, and later on NBC's Swing Soiree. Throughout the 40s, Nat and his group made guest appearances on the Old Gold, Chesterfield Supper Club, and the Kraft Music Hall shows. And in 1946, they became the first black performing act to have their own sponsored radio series. The 15-minute program was called The King Cole Trio Time, and it was sponsored by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, which inspired a musical salute.
You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie, keeping all those gals away. Hiya, Baldy, get Wild Root right away.
Thank you.
Another important legacy from Nat Cole's radio years is the huge number of transcription recordings he made. In the 1930s and throughout much of the 40s, radio stations did not play commercial recordings. Most of the time, they featured live performances. Otherwise, they relied on transcription discs, studio recordings made especially for broadcast. These transcription recordings were particularly important to the King Cole Trio. Writer, Will Friedwald.
His particular combination was really uniquely suited for radio transcriptions. I mean, they were operating on a far less glamorous kind of budget situation than the commercial record companies were. They were very happy to work with these smaller groups just because they could be done quickly and cheaply. And they really liked the King Cole Trio because the trio was working constantly and they had devised all these routines, all these arrangements, and they were very, very professional. They could just come in and play these things and they would just tape them and get them down and, you know, they could record a lot of music very quickly and cheaply, which is why the King Cole Trio was very much sought after by these transcription services almost from the beginning. And the thing is that Cole did hundreds of tunes and transcriptions that he never had any opportunity to do elsewhere.
Not talking about old Sadie Green, she's the gal from New Orleans. They all sigh when she passes by, when she says, honey, hush. Now all the boys all over town love to see her come around. Then they start that going to town with that honey, hush. Now all the boys are jealous of her, cause she looks so neat. And all the girls are wild about her, cause she looks so sweet. And stepping out with them high yellows, snuffing all the other fellows. Boy, that gal is really mellow with that honey hood.
Honey Hush by the King Cole Trio. Nat Cole piano, Oscar Moore guitar, and Wesley Prince bass. One of hundreds of transcription recordings the trio made for radio broadcast. Performances that helped introduce the world to the amazingly supple vocal style of Nat King Cole.
Here we are together again, but somehow it's not the same. Where is our burning flame that we knew beautiful moons ago? Time was when I held you so close and whispered, my darling, you. You said the same thing too on those beautiful moons ago.
Will Friedwald.
Early on, Cole said that he sort of began singing pretty much to break the monotony or as to add another voice to the trio, because you have to remember that these people were working continually for years and years before anyone had heard of them, and they were experimenting with every possible thing they could do. And one of the things that started happening was that when Cole started to sing, people started requesting more and more of his singing, and that eventually, you know, became one of the very dominating aspects, not just of Cole's, you know, subsequent career as a pop vocalist, but of the trio itself. Cole's singing was always one of the most important elements of it.
Standing on a corner, all full of jive, but you know that you my boy, and I'll always give you five. Da-da-da-da. I hit that jive, Jack, put it in your pocket till I get back. Going downtown to see your man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack, put it in your pocket till I get back. Going downtown to see your man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand.
Cole loved these jivey novelty tunes, a lot of which were blueses or were blues-based, but Cole was really into these fast riffing numbers and these numbers with nonsense titles that meant absolutely nothing, some kind of catchy word or expression, and I think that that shows how Cole was always sort of into the temporal and the topical and the things that were happening just now. And in that respect, he reminds me a lot of the sensibility of the Warner Brothers cartoons of the period, say, or magazine articles from that period.
When skinny little me went out with money, the boys who saw us all laugh. But now it's not so funny, they're all gone with the draft. I was the Cary Grant, who couldn't be that neat, or quite as tough as George Raff. But since I have got flat feet, I'm not gone with the draft.
And I think that in capturing the specific climate of a given time, in a sense it turns around on him, because that becomes immortal. And it's like what Shaw once said about Shakespeare, is that the more he got into the specific stuff like Elizabethan politics, the more for all time he seems. It's a very strange sort of contradiction, but it works, I think, in Cole's case.
When Franklin D. did sign the draft, the cats all had a chill. The boys turned pale and ceased to laugh, 'cause this is a serious bill. They now realize that skinny me was the luckiest one of all. We can stay at home with Minnie while they face the cannonball. So boys, take it on the chin and always wear a smile. You'll find it hard to grin carrying 50 pounds for mile. When your year of drill is up, you get your camp's release. You can come back home and freshen up with the gals, your job in peace. Gone with the draft, look what the man has done to you. Gone with the draft, what in the world is there to do? And when the boys get back and see how I'm doing, they'll be sorry they laugh. 'Cause one can't keep on wooing and still be gone with a draft, 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 draft.
An Ode to Conscription from 1940, written by Nat King Cole and his bass player, Wesley Prince. You're listening to Jazz Profiles. I'm Nancy Wilson. Another of Nat Cole's own tunes put his stamp forever on the American vernacular, and it was King Cole Trio's first big hit for Capitol Records, Straighten Up and Fly Right.
Took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzzer tried to throw the monkey off of his back, but the monkey grabbed his neck and said, "Now listen, Jack. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Ain't no use in diving. What's the use of jiving? Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top." The buzzer told the monkey, "You are choking me. Release your hold and I will set you free." The monkey looked the buzzer right dead in the eye and said, "Your story's so touching, but it sounds just like a lie." Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
The King Cole Trio, Straighten Up and Fly Right. Even with so many popular hits and so many novelty numbers, at the root of Nat Cole's wide musical embrace was the blues. Nat Cole isn't often thought of as a blues player, but you can hear the blues in virtually everything he played, from his earliest transcriptions to his later commercial recordings. And to the blues, Nat brought his own style, as elegant and direct as the man himself.
Cole's approach to the blues was very singular in that instead of sort of getting into like the soggy excesses and the real sort of heavy blues sound, he tended to be even sparer, I think, than he was normally in playing a blues, because he knew you just had to push two or three of the right notes and it was exactly what he wanted. It was simple and it was appropriate and it was perfect.
It was early one Monday morning when I was on my way to school. That was the morning when I broke my mother's rule. I've been in love with you, baby, before I learned to call your name. I've been in love with you, baby, before I learned to call your name. Now you're in love with someone else. I know that's gonna drive me insane.
The Nat King Cole treatment of the blues. First, a blues piano excursion, Easy Listening Blues from 1944. Then with members of the Count Basie Band, a version of Pete Johnson and Joe Turner's Wee Baby Blues from 1958. By that time, Nat Cole was already one of America's most popular artists. He was at the pinnacle of his career, not just as a jazz pianist, but also in his expanding role as showman and vocalist. We'll hear more from Nat Cole, the jazz singer, on our next Jazz Profiles. Nat King Cole, the jazz pianist, is the first of a two-part tribute. It was written and produced by Margaret Howes. We had production help from Rolando Arrieta, Andy Trudeau, and Eugene Holly. Our engineers were Terry Knight, Leo Del Aguila, and Soraya Muhammad. Post-production engineers, Andy Rosenberg and John Carrillo. We'd like to thank Charles Lurie and Mosaic Records, Pete Welding and Capitol Records, Harry Belafonte, Evelyn Coles, and Carol Cole. The Jazz Profile series is produced by Tim Owens, assistant producer Madeline Smith, executive producers Mary Beth Kirshner and Murray Horwitz. For more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson, saying jazz is as pure as the life we live. So live it. This is NPR, National Public Radio.